Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening and welcome to Yada Yada. Happy Shabbat to one and all. I know we have Kirk with us. I think we're expecting JB as the program moves along this evening. I'm hopeful that we have a little bit better connection. I now have two internet sources, both of which are promising 75 megabits per second downstream. Actually, one that's supposed to be 100, but it's showing at about 75. The only negative is the one that I'm on now, which is all fiber as opposed to air fiber, whatever that means, only has about 10 megabits per second up versus the old 50. So we'll see if it is better. Our hope was that we would have less packet loss, which we think may have contributed to the outages in prior shows. Packet loss just means that when there's not adequate buffering, even if you have a very big pipeline, the staccato nature of the transmission makes a disconnect or a just horrible audio possible. So we'll find out as we go along, and let me know via the chat room if this is better. But currently, I have two internet sources, and we're going back and forth between the two. Kirk, you live in the People's Republic of California, the land where the governor goes to lavish parties and sits shoulder to shoulder in wine country and dines with friends over the Thanksgiving holiday. I'm sure gratis because they don't dig into their own pocket, mandating that no one can gather outside of immediate family, that you're not even allowed to rub shoulders with anybody that's not family, direct family, and that non-essential businesses are essentially shut down. Essential businesses are limited. Yeah, no restaurants, no bars. No. I guess you can walk on the beach, but either social distancing with a mask or with a direct family member.
There's also a curfew.
It's amazing they can tell you, dictate all that stuff, and they think they're constitutional.
Yes. And there's no such thing as if you have a business and you can't use it, it's not a I would consider that to be quite essential to you. It may not be essential to the rest of y'all, but it's pretty damn expensive to the person who's got the business and investment.
It just gets back into the whole liberal mindset where if you are a liberal, you get your jollies over lording over other people, over being able to dictate what someone can and cannot do. The whole collectivism. Everyone's got to act the same way. It's all about limiting rights as opposed to allowing people to express them. And it's all about controlling business. And it's so sad that there isn't a liberal politician in the country that has ever gone as far as work for a business. They have, may have zero idea as to what is entailed to start and manage a business and have it grow. So it is a very frustrating thing to see these idiots trying to control the lives of other people. And of course, the consequences of it are utterly devastating. Iowa had an entirely different plan. And what's most interesting, if you compare it to COVID, the first thing that the COVIDers wish to do is restrict people's ability to associate. Now, they miss the fact that man is a social creature. We were created to be a social being. And therefore, we are incapable of surviving in a healthy way without companionship. And so by limiting people's ability to interact, children to go to school, and men and women to socialize with one another, they've actually caused more hardship, more sexual abuse, more drug abuse, more alcoholism, more suicides, more chronic psychological problems, domestic abuse, than COVID by a huge margin. Now, I live in an exceedingly liberal place where there's only one political party. It's the Democratic Party. There is no Republican Party here. 100% of those who are elected are either exceedingly liberal or they're just too dumb to have a political position. They earned their right to be a local senator because they were popular in high school.
Hey, James.
The consequence of all of that is that you know, we've been shut down twice for COVID, and yet the COVID deaths here, I think, are around 20 to 22, and the murders are at 48 or 49. So you are twice as likely to be murdered here as you are to be die from COVID. And so with murders, I am quite certain that if you restrict people's socializing, if you restrict their movement, you tell them you can't go to work, you can't go out, you can't do anything, murder rate would go right down with it. We had no contact with anybody else. Pretty much assured. In fact, guaranteed.
That's so, yeah.
And murders are twice as prevalent as our COVID deaths. And yet none of these buffoons have said, well, you know, murders are so out of control, twice as bad as COVID. We need to shut down the economy and people's liberty and their livelihoods because there's morons out there killing people.
Yeah. Well,
so how can they justify doing it for a virus?
Well, they can't. They just did it.
Yeah.
I think of them, they must have been denied becoming the third grade bathroom monitor. They held grudge forever.
Yes.
You got to control everything. Got to be somebody.
Yeah. Having a life that has no meaning, no purpose, other than being popular.
Yeah.
So here's Yahweh's view of all of this. He recognized the problem that the liberal politician does not recognize. And by the way, I'm not suggesting that conservative politicians are better or that there is such a thing as a conservative politician. If you were conservative, you wouldn't be running for politics because you would have a disdain for government. So if you were genuinely conservative, you wouldn't be in politics. But that said, I'm not suggesting that a conservative politician, therefore, is better, but they are at least ever so slightly better in terms of their desire to control everyone's lives. Yahweh Almighty, we're still in early Bereshit, and so Yahweh is almost universally identified as Yahweh, who is God, said, Amar, constantly throughout this, presentation early on, as we're dealing with creation, and then we're dealing with what transpired in Eden. It's everything is Yahweh, who is God, said. So if Yahweh, who is God, said, what do you think the most intelligent human response would be to that?
Why don't you pay attention? Listen.
Listen. Yeah, that seems reasonable. So why do they skip this part and go to Paul's letters? They rather listen to Paul than they would listen to God? Or why do religious Jews skip all of this and say, we're just going to flip over to the Talmud and listen to men argue with one another?
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
All right, well, I don't know the reason, but I actually like listening to Yahweh. It says, Yahweh Almighty said, it is not good. You know, there's a lot of Tob in the early Bereshith accounts. So God's telling us about the tree of the awareness of good and bad, and here he's saying it's not good. You would think he could say it's bad, but nonetheless, he just said it's low Tob. And maybe he's saying that because there are aspects of Tob that he wants to convey and just say, this is the opposite of good. It's not productive. It's not beneficial. It's not correct or proper. It isn't favorable. It's not enjoyable. It's not desirable or agreeable. It isn't moral. Moral. Isn't that interesting? It isn't pleasing or joyful. It isn't pleasing or joyful. It isn't desirable for the man, Adam, to exist alone. By himself. You know what's interesting is the word for alone in Hebrew. It's bad.
It's bad.
It's bad for man to be alone. Yeah. God is recognizing that man's not happy alone. Man's not happy. Doesn't enjoy life. Life isn't desirable, it isn't agreeable, it isn't productive, it isn't beneficial. There's no aspect of our lives that are good alone. And yet, what is it that the world, in particularly places like California, are trying to do with people's lives?
Totally make them alone.
Yeah, isolation. And, you know, you're living in Texas. I think Texas is... has earned the number one spot on the great COVIDs. And Texas did for a while have sort of an open door policy with exception of the major cities. Now, what's the status now in terms of livelihood and freedoms in the great state of Texas?
People are suffering. Businesses are closing.
Yeah. So there's a lot of restrictions on people's mobility. In Texas.
Oh yeah, they just rent that. Just the other day, they announced shutdown back to 50% at restaurants at most.
Which is, by the way, 50% more
there for a while.
Yeah, than restaurants in California. Now, I would have to say, out of curiosity, since the dramatic shutdowns in places like California, in particular, didn't work, and they have, yesterday I think was the single worst day in the history of California on COVID, and we're having huge increases in the spread of COVID, and that was following all these shutdowns. Why is the response now shutdowns, lockdowns? What isn't the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing and expecting a different result? Maybe we should have some of our governors tested for such things.
Insanity.
So God just had it just really straightforward.
We're the ones keep voting them in.
Yeah,
keep going from one
true.
Party to the other to expect a different result.
That is correct, yep. Well, I think they made a huge step backwards. I mean, it's hard to imagine that you could have a step backwards with a a nincompoop who is in his own private little world that promotes fake news and conspiracies and is clearly a narcissist. It's hard to imagine that you could go backwards from there, but we did. And it's going to be obvious to all reasonable people in short order. Yahweh Almighty said, it is not good for man to be alone, to be by himself. Now, that really begs a question that we talked about the other day. Why was Adam alone? Wasn't God there with him?
It was the pressure of it. Smothering, yes, I think. When you talk about being smothering, you can overdo it.
Yeah.
Good thing.
But if he was alone, is it possible that God could be omnipresent?
No.
Nope.
Absolutely not.
So, with God making this statement, why is it that religions, and particularly Christianity, promote the idea that God is omnipresent? Even Judaism does.
They want that God is always watching you.
You're making an imaginary God. I mean, the God of Christianity, if he's omnipresent or if he's omniscient, he is not the same created Adam, that inspired the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Because the God that inspired the Torah, prophets, and Psalms said it's not good for Adam to be alone, which would not be possible if God was omnipresent. And when Adam took a bite of the fruit that he was encouraged not to eat, what did God do? Adam, where are you? Adam, what did you do? So, clearly, God's not omniscient, and he's not omnipresent.
Yeah.
Okay, so we definitely learned something here, and then our natural instinct is to say, why? Why was God not with Adam all of the time? And more importantly, what does that portend for us as it relates to eternity? Because every lesson here is presented not for Adam's benefit, not for Abram's benefit, not for Moshe's benefit, not for Dode's benefit. Everything here is presented for our benefit. So why is it that we're being told that Adam, even in the garden, was alone and that being alone was not good? There had to be something worse than him being alone.
Oh, yes.
God is telling you that in eternity, we aren't going to be side by side all of the time. We're not going to go everywhere together. We're not going to be together all the time, because that's worse than us being alone.
You need some space sometimes. Yeah. You need to do your own thing, of course.
Correct. I'm in a really wonderful relationship, but I need time.
Your time.
That's just me and Yah time, or just, I want to go and
me time.
Yeah, just me time. And there's nothing wrong with that. And and you think I do. Boy, does she ever. She's an introvert. I'm an extrovert. Yeah. She's of those group that says, even when COVID's over, I'm not so sure that I want you to keep your distance. The fact of the matter is, God recognizes that even when he empowers us and enriches us such that we are more like him, that if we were to be together all the time, the relationship wouldn't be interesting. We need to go off and explore and then come back and share what we did. We can't have God looking over our shoulder every waking moment and have any sense of freedom or independence. You know, I like being a little bit mischievous now and then. And, I just as soon have the world not know about it. I mean, we're all that way. I, You know, when I go out and play golf and I hit a duck hook, I don't want the whole world to know about it. You know? So we do need our time apart, and God is telling us that he didn't create us to dominate us. He didn't create us for him to be involved in the minuscule aspects of our lives, which this also then destroys both Islamic and Jewish and Christian mindsets. Rabbinical Jews, Orthodox Judaism, actually teaches, if you read what the rabbis say, they're constantly telling Jews that you should be celebrating the fact, you should be excited and thrilled with the fact that you have a crappy life. Matter of fact, you should be thrilled that we have a history of a really miserable existence, because we're miserable because God's doing this to us. And if we weren't miserable, it would be an indication that God's no longer paying attention to us. So we're miserable, and you're going to continue to be miserable because that's God's way of interacting with us. He wants you to be miserable. That's a paraphrase, but it's not much different than what they actually say. Yeah, go read it. Study it. If I'm wrong, tell me. But I mean, I must have read 30 sites the other day. I was just so dumbfounded. Why, you're miserable because God wants you that way. And that's his way of making sure that you're going to be holy and pure, is to make you really miserable, make your life difficult. And so that would obviously be wrong if God is saying Adam is alone and he is in Eden. And then you go from there to moose slimes, and everything is Allah willing. I mean, they can't commit to anything unless it's Allah willing. Well, God doesn't get involved in the minutiae of our lives. If you want to do something, do it. If you don't. Don't blame it on God. And, of course, Christians will tell you that every aspect of their lives is orchestrated by God. God is so loving. He made me fail the test so that I would study harder. He made me go broke so that I would appreciate the value of money. I don't know. It's one of those things is, they win the lottery is because God gave them the money. If they lose the lottery, it's because, God didn't want them to have the money. No. God is not involved in the minutiae of your life. It's your life. Live it however you want to live it. If you're part of the covenant, you can engage with God from time to time. I spend all day today sitting in this chair translating and writing about 100 pages now from finishing volume 2. And that's good because it's probably going to be 600 some odd pages. And so, you know, it's nearly done of yada yada. And there are times when I did it that I was really insightful, and we've gotten having a wonderful conversation. Our conversations are really much better when he's talking and I'm listening. Nonetheless, parts of it that are really uplifting is parts of it that are just work. You know, it's not all peaches and cream. So very much like what we ought to expect from God in eternity. We're not going to be together every moment. Every moment is not going to be a crescendo. You know, if you've ever listened to a concert, if you ever listened to a concerto, if you ever listen to a good song or a good singer, they don't start off screaming at the top of their voice and continue to scream the whole way through. They start off softly and tell the story and bring you in. The music does this. And then it builds with enthusiasm, and then it quiets back down. It's so much more interesting than just blaring at full tilt all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
even in a relationship, a dating relationship, you go and you get everything's exciting, and then you need to move away a little bit, and then you re-engage again. So God is saying it's not good for man to exist by himself. So God said, I'm going to engage and continually act on his behalf, producing a helper and supporter like his corresponding counterpart, Neged. So God said, this is my kid. I've made him. I'm responsible for him. He's not happy this way. And so I have a choice. I can dominate his time 24/7, and I just know that's not going to work out for either of us. Or I can let him continue to be unhappy. That's not a good option because it's not productive. It's not beneficial. Or I can resolve the problem. And he says, I'm going to resolve the problem. I am going to engage on his behalf, and I'm going to produce a helper and a supporter for him. His corresponding counterpart, an interesting word, neged, describing that which is straightforward, right for him, open to him, close by in his immediate proximity. That's the definitions, but I'm not sure that's all the word means.
No.
It's got a G in it. And anytime you see a Hebrew word with a G in it, yeah, you need to worry. You know, what about Gaza? What about Gomorrah? I don't know. G's in words are usually a bad thing. So what do you find when you looked up neged?
Oh, well, we had a non-gimel bilet. And, of course, the trouble with the what you're addressing is that the gimel is going in the wrong direction. So that's, I took it as a clue. He's talking all this wonderful stuff, all these positive things about having someone with his corresponding counterpart. However, there's something ominous there or something that can go the wrong way, because the word indicates that someone is walking away towards man. The one is laying
right
down, or the inheritance, the future generations. But that's, in this case, we'll call him Adam. They say it is a man. And she is walking in the wrong direction toward him, away from the
doorway.
I always think of that as the doorway to Pesach. So she's
right,
walking away from God.
Yeah.
And that's like a little
the, the doorway. And the gemel is pointed away from the doorway and is facing procreation, the next generation.
Yes.
And it's even sometimes it's rather than a sperm, it's a root. And so man is looking to be rooted, but at the far extreme of the doorway.
So
there is an implication in the letter.
There's a clue.
That this could be something that would lead him in the wrong direction. Now, God's assessment, I think, is brilliant. After presenting the tree of the knowledge of good and bad, Yahweh presents something that is exceptionally good and beneficial. I would go so far as to say that this statement and the next several, Yahweh has more clearly revealed his character and the nature of the relationship he desires than most any other statement in the Torah and prophets. God is saying he loves his time with Adam. I'm sure they had a great time together, but they could not be together all the time without just wearing the relationship out and being on each other's nerves. So there had to be time apart, but Adam was not designed to be by himself, which means he needed that counterpart. So Yahweh created humankind for the express purpose of the covenant relationship. It was intended to be rewarded for him and better for us. And for this purpose, the ultimate tov, good, we were conceived to be social beings. As such, not good for us to be alone. Solitary confinement for humans is
horrible.
Torture.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. Man is nothing without woman. We can't be fulfilled. We can't survive. For humankind to correctly perceive the intent of the covenant, we would need to experience love, marriage, and family, working together towards a common goal. Now, while the woman would provide Adam with tremendous happiness, apart from YAWA, now that is not all this offer of assistance represents. A concluding statement does not actually say that YAWA made someone for Adam. By using Asha Lahu, God is actually saying that he engaged on Adam's behalf, acting in his interests. Isn't that interesting that everybody wants to make an Adam, you know, I'm going to make something. There's a lot of Hebrew words for make, but Asha isn't a word that means make. It means to act and engage. So he acted on Adam's behalf. When we couple Asha with Ezer, Ezer is an interesting word because we get this idea that in English, I don't know what the reason is, but we think that to be a helper or a supportive is a subordinate role. And I don't view it that way at all. You know, Leigh and I have a wonderful friend on the island, and she is overcoming and has risen victorious over a lot of religious torment, where her parents were in a cult and were very, very abusive as part of a Christian cult. And so we're constantly reinforcing how wonderful it is to have survived this, because now you have character, you have insights, you can do a much better job of raising your children, and it builds a sense of grit, you know, of determination. And so as we are helping her through this, I can assure you that as the helper, we're not being in any way below, submissive to her. To help, you could be in a position of equality. You can be in a position of superiority. You can be in a position of inferiority. Help should not be a pejorative where people think that the helper is less important than the person they are helping. Great example is
Yah.
Right, because Yahweh constantly says, I am your helper. He tells Dode all the time, I'm here to help you.
Yeah.
So I'm going to assure you that it doesn't diminish Yah. And I can tell you when I reach out to anyone who might benefit from some of what I know, and I'm helping them, or, you know, there's a young boy that we've gotten to know. It's down on the when we were living full time on the boat in the marina, and we're constantly reaching out and helping him. We bring him to dinner. We introduce him to kids his age. We give him things to do where he has success and you know, make a big deal over his achievements. I'm going to tell you that I'm enriched every time we give something to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had him over for a dinner party last night that was where you're cooking at the table. It was this device that we had made, and we had a friend over that was close to his age where he had a chance to enjoy that company because he doesn't go to school. He's homeschooled. And he, for the first time in his life, had the opportunity to choose what foods he wanted to cook on this grill. And he could cook them to his heart's content, and which vegetables and breads and cheeses. Oh, you should have seen the smile. Now, we worked, Leigh in particular, she began at 10 o'clock in the morning preparing all of this. I'm going to tell you, she's not diminished by it. And oh, I worked hard to help her do it. We were not diminished by it. We benefited from it. And Yahweh is as well. He says, this is my opportunity. Let me help Adam. So what we have here is God saying, I'm going to offer a positive influence. Chawa, now a name which will be revealed much later in this story, is indeed presented as a metaphor for the set apart spirit. She's our helper and supporter, the one who assists and serves us, our Zucker, who rescues, aids, and renews us, providing benefits. Now, we have to take that with a little bit of a grain of salt in that, yes, Chawa means life giver, And there are aspects of how she is presented that model aspects of the set apart spirit. Chawa has her deficiencies, and the set apart spirit does not. Now, beyond all these insights, the most profound reason behind Yahweh's willingness to act in our interests is that for there to be genuine love, for this relationship to have some mutuality, man would need to experience and explore the option of not spending time with God, of loving someone else. So for there to be meaningful choice, the other option has to be appealing. Now, God may have outdone himself on this, at least from a masculine point of view, in that he did, in fact, make women very appealing. But, you know, it's not just for men. I mean, look at the animal world. I mean, can you imagine all of the fancy footwork and the dances and the songs that male birds sing, and they're just preoccupied with it to attract a female bird?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or all of the things we have seen in the animal kingdom that, you know, a bull elephant will fight to the death for the right to have, you know, to be the man of the herd. And the same is true with lions. And it's true with so look at antelope and deer and the degree that they will fight almost to the death.
Or rams.
Rams. And so it's not just men. It's within animals. This attraction for mating is extreme. So God created an exceedingly appealing alternative to himself. Now that also says that he has
he's pretty brave.
Yeah, that he's very confident in himself.
Yeah.
He's not insecure. He's not stacking the deck in his favor. He's making certain that if you choose him, it's going to be because you really want that relationship to work. Now, it's interesting that you don't have to choose, if you're a man, not woman, to love God. You have to choose not humankind to engage in the covenant relationship, but that's collective humankind, not individuals like a woman. So when the alternative is God, spending time with someone else would have to be exceptionally alluring and rewarding. Moreover, the relationship would have to be complementary, and that by man choosing to be with another companion, he would not be avoiding God, but ideally would come to better appreciate the nature of the covenant. If you've got an opportunity to engage in conversation with someone that you respect, who shares similar values, who has similar interests, and love them, you're in a much better position to understand the mindset of God. And if that person becomes a husband or wife, and you become mother and father, and you raise children, then you are hugely advanced in terms of your ability to appreciate and understand Yahweh's covenant.
Agreed.
Yep. As an interesting aside, perhaps a jab to Christians, by combining the primary and secondary meaning of bad, God said that it was bad, estranging and separating, to carry a cross. That bad means to carry a cross. It is estranging.
And by the way, it really is.
It still befuddles me how you could have 2 and 3 billion people think that God is somehow humored by nailing him to a stick and carrying around a God being tortured to death, and that God is just tickled pink when you carry a symbol of him being tortured to death. What in the hell is wrong with you?
Huh.
Most popular religion in the history of the world, and its symbol is a dead god on a stick. it's painful when you think about it. Now, the if that weren't bad enough, I guess, to get to our attention, the tertiary meaning of bad is branch. So this is the Torah's most enduring symbol of Dod, who is both the Messiah and Son of God. It is by listening to him that the doorway of heaven is opened. Now, before we leave this, I think, rather profound declaration, recognize that while Yah said that he would be Adam's helper and supporter, God routinely refers to himself as our helper. So this is not a pejorative term, as we discussed. In truth, the one who serves, the one who rescues, the one who renews, the one who restores is greater than the beneficiary. Now, based on what follows, I suspect that before creating Chawa, Yao explored the other favorable option, which was to spend more time with Adam. So this is an interesting statement. After it's not good for Adam to be alone, I'm going to create a helper. He needs a helper and a counterpart. God says, now, Yahweh, Almighty, who fashioned and formed Yetzer out of the elements of the earth, every living animal of the expansive environment, in addition to every bird of the sky, brought them to Adam. In order to see what he would call them and how he would greet and welcome them. Now, if God brought every whole Chaya life form from the Hasadei, the expansive environment, which is the area outside of the garden, to Adam for him to Kara interact with, would there not have been Homo sapiens?
Has to be.
In fact, there would have to be.
All is all. Coal is coal. Coal is all. All is coal.
Right. Yeah. All is. All is what all means. That's all that all means.
Yeah. That's all that all means.
Yeah. So he would have brought man to Adam. Therefore, everything for the benefit of the relationship, Asher, that Adam approached and designated, called out to and encountered, Kara, that became the name and reputation of that living soul, Nefesh Che. So animals all have a soul. Every animal with a soul was brought to Adam. So there are a number of things here that are, I think, are evident by these words. The first is, of all the things that Yahweh enjoys, he's going to pick his favorite. He's got a problem now. Adam's not fully satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
Things are not right with Adam. So he's going to engage on Adam's behalf. The very first thing God chooses to do is introduce Adam to every one of the life forms that he has created.
Mm-hmm.
That tells you a lot of things. Yahweh views life as not only good, he thinks the interaction with life is beneficial, and that he thinks that that by sharing what he has created, the relationship would grow. A lot of things here that are being communicated. It's God's go-to moment, life. Now, looking forward to eternity, what does that mean?
Same thing. He's going to do again. He's come look. Look at all this
come
stuff.
Come look.
As an artist, I can tell you. That's a big deal. You bring them to your home or whatever, to your gallery, and it's fun to see what they see and what you did.
Correct.
It's painful sometimes if they don't. But,
right.
On the other hand. But mostly it's like, wow, isn't that cool? They like it.
Yeah, well, it's one thing. Like a couple days ago, we had this bright red sunset, And so it was beautiful to watch it, more wonderful to share it. But while vistas and views are beautiful, there's something just exciting if you're out there in the water and you see a humpback whale swimming by. Whole different experience. You're out on your boat and you've got a pod of dolphins swimming along with you. You're down swimming in the water and a sea turtle goes by. Life is far more exciting than just panoramas of natural things. You know, I go scuba diving, and my preference is to scuba dive in the middle of wonderfully colorful and interesting fish, as opposed to scuba diving where, okay, well, that sand was interesting, or that rock was interesting. No. Life is what's interesting. So what this means is that there is life on other planets. That's what this means. And that in eternity, God's going to take us to some of the beings that he has created and let us interact with them. It likely means that we will be able to interact with animals such that we understand what they're thinking and we can communicate with them. Wouldn't it be fun?
Wow.
If you could just sit down and talk with your dog, you know, man, I might even want to have an exchange with a mosquito and say, you know,
get away.
Yes. Go, or I'm going to kill you.
This is a can of Raid.
This is a can of Raid. Let me introduce you. I do not like you. Go away. You are ugly. You are toxic. So God obviously loves animals, and he wanted to interact with them and wanted to enjoy our interaction with them. And from my point of view, it took me a long time to figure this out. I always thought that this was simply an expression and name the animal. But that's not what this is. Kara is a very broad term. And it means to invite, to welcome, to interact with, to announce, to meet. It's a term that speaks of all of those things. So God was really wanted to see how Adam was going to interact with life and what he would have to say about it. So they were going to have a conversation about Adam's expressions as it relates to life. It's one of life's greatest joys. And Yahweh wants to spend forever with his children showing off what DNA can do when it comes to life. Well, we will one day experience the same thing, although, as I say, on a much greater scale. So all of this is being communicated to say, if you think this would be fun, then you'll probably like eternity. We're going to encounter all the life forms that Yahweh has created throughout the universe for our edification, enrichment, and entertainment. Adam summoned and met with, greeting, Kara, by name, Shem, proper designation and reputation, all call of the animals, the birds of the sky, and every conscious life form, Wala, Kol, Chaya, Nefesh, of the expansive environment, of the breadth of the land that is conducive to life. But there was not found for Adam a helper and supporter similar to or right for him. So that would mean that woman without an Asama was not right, was not helpful to Adam. That would mean that as a buddy, a man without an Asama, because that was the one thing that made Adam unique, that made Adam the first man created in God's image, is a Nesama. So man without a Nesama was just way too, either too boring or counterproductive, not beneficial for Adam. And as adorable as a platypus or a aardvark might be, they didn't do it either. Now, at the time, my guess is that you didn't have domesticated dogs. So if he's going to meet a dog, it's going to be a wolf, it's going to be a fox, it's going to be a hyena, it's going to be a, you know, some form mm-hmm. of wild dog.
Predator.
Now, yeah. It's true that you go back 5,000, 6,000 years ago, there are many burial sites, caves, and that sort of thing, where early man had already domesticated dogs. Now, that does not mean that the dog was a family pet. The dog may have been used in terms of cooperative hunting, so that the dog was trained to hunt and got the benefit of the hunt with man. So dogs and humans have been together for thousands of years, but I still don't think that at this point dog was one of those companions.
It wasn't one of them.
Yeah, of course, I love the Hebrew word for God, dog, so God doesn't have a negative view of dogs because the Hebrew word for dog is kolev, all heart. So so there's a fairly positive view here, but there wasn't a dog. That didn't work either. He didn't like the goldfish didn't work, the dolphins didn't work, the cockatoos didn't work, parrot didn't work. So, point taken. God created Adam for the covenant relationship as a special creature. It was not good for him to be alone, and it is likely that Yahweh's initial preference, call it plan A for Adam, of an intensely personal and interactive relationship with man was just overwhelming. Concerned and compassionate, God went to plan B for Bahiba, animal, which was to fill man's need for companionship with other animals and other living souls. But while God was too much for Adam in plan A, none of the Bahima were adequate in plan B. Now, that's not to say that plan A, Adam, or plan B, Bahima, were not wonderful. They were just not completely satisfying or perfect. And in fact, they're still in place to this day. Independently, inadequate, they have been augmented, but not abandoned. There is an interesting insight here, consider. Since Yahweh grabbed hold of this man and placed him in the garden, and since Yahweh was introducing him to every significant ambulatory animal and bird that he created, Adam was not only introduced to another man, but also to another woman. So we have to recognize that men and women, while they may have been interesting, men and women outside of the garden had to be ferocious. First, they had to stink to high heaven. I mean, we didn't exactly have running showers and hot water and hygiene. There was no soap or anything like that. Second of all, they were living in the dirt and chasing after and eating wild animals. They would have been exceedingly rough to survive in that kind of an environment, and tough. I mean, this was kill or be killed out there. It was tough. You know, at that time they weren't building luxury homes. You know, the accoutrements that make being next to another person attractive didn't exist outside of the garden. So, man just was not appealing. Woman was not appealing.
You know, there's another insight here too.
Yeah,
it kind of proves that it proves that Yahweh doesn't know everything, because he's going through all these to discover what it is about Adam that he needs. He's not just doing this so we'll know about it. He's actually doing this. He said, I try. Okay, let's try this, and I'll try that, and okay. Then, I, then I'll create. Okay. So
and
this,
people don't like the thought
to,
that, the people don't like the thought that God did not know the outcome, and therefore he did not know that Adam would need time alone.
He didn't know how to respond to any of this stuff.
He did not know that Adam wouldn't be fulfilled in the arrangement that he had created. He did not know that Adam would not find a suitable alternative amongst all of the other animals that God thought were wonderful and exciting. He didn't know those things. If he had known those things, the story would not have been presented this way. And if he had known them, there'd be no reason for the story.
Yeah.
If God knows every outcome and orchestrated every outcome, then there's no reason for us to read this. Then he's orchestrating every outcome. No, he's telling us this story in this way to affirm that he is not predestining the outcome, that he doesn't know how every relationship is going to transpire over time. Now, he's telling you that he's not into the minutia, and that he's allowing relationships to play out and to see where they lead, because that's what makes them interesting. It's the only way that a relationship can be interesting. So now, plan A and plan B, not so good. Well, good, but not great. So Yahweh was ready for plan C. Plan C is for Chawa. Yahweh would create his ultimate masterpiece, intelligent woman. As a result, Yahweh Almighty caused the man, Adam, to fall deeply asleep. Supernaturally, he induced sleep similar to anesthesia. And while he slept, he grasped hold of one of his ribs from his side, Mentesla. I don't know if he gave him a Tesla or not. Probably weren't any roads there, so I'm not sure. Tesla would have been fun. He could have really showed off in his Tesla, but I do not think that's what Tesla means in this case. But from his side, his bones and cartilage from around the heart and lungs, and sutured up the place beneath it. Now, a lot of folks would just say, okay, the rib, that means it's next to the heart. Got to be lovey-dovey. But, of course, in ancient Hebrew,
that's not where the heart is.
Yeah, the heart is the source of judgment. That means if you're going to take it from the heart, you're going to take it from the place where people think, where you're, where you get your sense of motivation,
your sense of guts,
character, your response to the world around you is at your heart. Yeah, the liver was the seat of emotions. So he took this rib from Adam's side. Now, that's a heck of a clue, because what did Yahweh want to be with us? He wanted us to be an upright being that walks side by side, right? Close by. Yeah. So he's creating for Adam something that he envisioned for themselves, so that you have an upright being and they're side by side in this relationship. Now, he caused Adam to fall asleep. He's doing some surgery here. I guess that's part of it. But, God could have done this in any other way. I think part of it is, the idea, if you're going to show somebody a big surprise, you say, close your eyes. Okay, keep them closed. And then you bring the big surprise and voila. So while he slept, he grasped hold of one of his ribs from his side and sutured up the place beneath it with living tissue. Then Yahweh Almighty constructed with the rib that which to reveal the benefits of the relationship Asher he had taken from the man Adam. So out of this rib, Yahweh is constructing something that will help reveal the benefits of the relationship. And from the man Adam, a woman for a wife, La Isha. Isha can be translated woman or wife. It is more comfortable being translated female than it is being translated wife, There's no real wedding ceremony here. This is they are man and woman. Isha is principally the Hebrew word for woman. And he brought her to the man, Adam. Now, that's quite the reveal, isn't it? Can you imagine that being there the first time God said, okay. So, aardvarks and platypuses, not so much. Not into, cockatoo. Mm-hmm. So, what I've got for you now, you tell me if you can turn this down. Okay.
That's when he gave him oxygen, right?
Yeah. The woman was not just made for man. She was part of him. Okay, boy. She came with an asoma. Oh, boy. Things were getting better. Plan C. Yahweh could have selected an existing woman for Adam among the thousands scurrying about outside of the Garden of Eden, but he did not do so for the obvious reason. Without an asama conscience, such a woman would have been vastly inferior to Adam, just like all the other animals. They would have had nothing to talk about nor anything to agree upon. Moreover, God's whole concept here is, in the covenant, I want you to walk away from your animal nature. The very idea of being circumcised is to be separated from your animalistic nature. That's what it would circumcise in the Bashar. We're separating from our animalistic nature. The last thing that was going to work is for Adam to become more animalistic. He needed to be more Nesama man. The best way to do that is provide Nesama woman. He would have something to talk about. As an outsider, if that's what God had done, she would have brought the world's problems into the garden, which would have been inappropriate and would have destroyed Eden's purpose. So God could not bring a woman inside the garden to corrupt it. Just as the set-apart spirit is part of God, taken from God, and then sent to us for this purpose of association life, so was Yahweh. And in a more plebeian sense, the rib was selected because it surrounded the heart, the seat of judgment, and the lungs, which are synonymous with the breath of life known as the nefesh, soul. So when you hear what Adam said next, either Adam was stunningly brilliant, or he may have been inspired to say this, because this is really profound what he said. And I can tell you, if I had been at that reveal, I'm saying, wow.
mumble.
I can tell you, on my first date, I had no game. And I'm not, I just don't see how Adam could have been this articulate. But again, the story of what occurred in the garden is not being told from Adam's perspective or Adam's benefit or Chawa's benefit. It's being told for our benefit. So these words reveal the purpose and nature of Chawa in a way that we would learn why she was the ideal helper for him. So, then the man, Adam, said, "This is the way to conduct one's life." La panav. Well, okay. The pattern of behavior to be followed, the motivation to push forward, the persistent heartbeat of life. Its essential nature, a stem, the skeleton upon which human life hangs, the substance and essence of an upright life. Out of my essence, esteem, a living being able to communicate intelligently, Bashar, for my desire to share positive thoughts with humanity, Min Bashar Ani. For this reason, she shall be greeted, welcome, and called Kara, woman, Isha, because out of man, Ish, she was taken. Lakash. Wow. Okay, that's eloquent. I mean, I read it and I say, oh my goodness, who is your speechwriter? Can you imagine being on a on your first date and you
no.
you're introduced to, you know, you say hello and you exchange pleasantries, and the next words out of your mouth are, this is the way to conduct one's life. It's essential nature. Out of my essence, a living being able to communicate intelligently, for my desire to share positive thoughts with humanity. And for this very reason, she shall be greeted and welcomed and called woman, because out of man she was taken. Now, I would say if you gave that speech, and unless somebody is like really into poetry or prose or intellectual understand, most women would just say, hey, dude, you are way too full of yourself. I don't know what you're taking. But stop that. You know?
That's not great pillow talk to me. Yeah.
No, that's just
no.
That is just not going
eloquent,
to.
Yes.
It's eloquent. And it does communicate a lot. That the man said, this is the way to conduct your life, the very essential nature of life is for men and women to come together, love one another, become mother and father, raise children, build a home, support one another. It's the essence of the covenant. It is the way to conduct one's life. Or simply stated, best gift ever. Now, Adam was obviously bright and articulate. I mean, he was conversing with God. I would think that if you had spent all this time with God and you were talking about DNA and life and creation and the like, you're probably going to be smarter than the average dude. So he was a smart guy. As for me, I'd been way too distracted with the accoutrements to be lucid. Yowza might have been the best I could have done at the time. Can you even imagine being introduced to someone
the old joke?
So
you know, yes. showed man, woman, and that's why she got named woman, because he went, whoa, man.
Whoa, man. Yeah. But just imagine being introduced to someone so beautiful, so perfectly designed, so intelligent and conversant, so helpful and fun by God, and him telling you that he created her especially for you. I was talking to my son. He's dating out there and you know, lives in San Diego. And I was sharing with him what I've come to recognize. And it's just my own personal view. Maybe right, maybe wrong. But nonetheless, I thought it was interesting in this context is that what I told him, I said, you know, the most important things are not appearances. And we're actually not told anything about what a child would look like. Yeah, appearance is nice and everything, but it's not the most important thing. Somebody being super articulate or brilliant, it's nice, but that's not the most important thing in a relationship. You know, the most important thing in a relationship, being nice, being supportive, being kind, being affectionate, being interested in the other person, being helpful.
Which means
those things never go out of
style. Feel.
Those things never go out of style.
No.
You know, you could date and marry, you know, Miss Universe. And if she's not nice, if she's not affectionate, if she's not helpful, if she's just not kind, you're going to be miserable.
Mm-hmm. I've met many of attractive women who I would not want to spend more than 10 minutes around if I didn't have to.
Right. So, I think that Chawa was designed to be fun, to be enjoyable to be around, to be conversant, intelligent. You know, Plan C would be a winner. Adam had been taught by the best. his declaration, this is the way to conduct one's life, its essential nature. That's sublime. He is saying that together man and woman serve as a picture of the covenant. And this is why Bashar is a living being able to communicate intelligently. It was Adam's Bashar, desire to share these positive thoughts with humanity. Bashar is as much about being comprised of living tissue as it is being filled with meaningful words and uplifting ideas that we want to share. But Bashar is like Neged. It can very quickly, its primary meaning, as a matter of fact, is preaching that conveys a message that people want to hear, a popular message. So it's like Neged. It's one of those words that sounds good on the surface, but you look a little bit deeper and all of a sudden you're, ooh, that's, that could be a problem. I don't think it starts off with the intent of being a problem. It's about making a declaration, but it certainly is used in a lot of negative contexts.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, to tell his story in a way that we would not miss, woman was created to live with man. We would come to understand love. We would come to value affectionate and caring relationships, a tender touch, an uplifting conversation, a sweet smile, the joy of and value of working together. You know, last night we did something very simple, but it's a lot of work. You know, we had this dinner party for these two kids. One of their moms was there, and the girl's mom was there, who we really liked too. And we had worked since 10 o'clock in the morning to put this kind of fun evening together, where you would be able to grill in the middle of the table. And we had imported raclette cheese, which is a special kind of cheese just for it melts really well. And all of these vegetables and meats and breads that could be toasted and baked and grilled as all part of this. And then we set a very fancy table. I mean, there was crystal and all the right implements. I mean, it was really just jewel placemats with little crystal beads on them. I mean, we treat these kids like, okay, you know, this is part of an experience that you're probably not accustomed to. And
it's a grown-up party.
Yeah, and to see them choose what they wanted to eat and grill it, and then find the flavors delicious and have so much fun together. Their smile. This was something we had done together that had such rewards and listening to these kids talk about how wonderful this evening was, how it was unlike anything they'd ever done before.
Good for them.
Special, worthwhile. We worked together to create something that was special. It was caring. It was genuinely investing in the lives of other people. And it brought us closer together. It was a wonderful thing to do. Men and women can come together, build a home, conceive children, and raise them. They can teach and guide their children, lifting them up so that each will live life to the fullest. Reinforcing all of this point, God would say, accordingly, therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and engage becoming close with his woman, and they shall exist as a unified pronouncement of life. Now, did Adam have a mommy and daddy?
No.
How about Chawa? Mommy and daddy?
No.
No. No. No. No. So,
no better,
was No, was this statement then for the benefit of Adam and Chawa? Is there anything they could have done here? No. So this statement is for us. It's here to teach us. Okay, I'm telling you, I'm trying to reinforce an important aspect of this story. Men and women coming together, leaving the bonds of their parents' home to become one and to rear and raise children. And in such a way, you'll get to experience in a very tangible manner the nature of the covenant. Now, for God to say that they shall leave their father and mother, is there any way then that he would write a statement that he etched in stone and say, you should revere, honor, and value your mother and father, if he's talking about earthly parents? As a matter of fact, if that statement follows, that's the third statement he etched in stone on the first tablet, it follows the end of the second one, which says that fathers corrupt their children to the third and fourth generation. The next, or two lines later, it cannot say, oh, well then, honor the person that just corrupted you.
Yeah, hardly.
All right. So
therefore,
God is not talking about therefore in that our earthly parents, and in this particular case, he is talking about our earthly parents. Even though Adam and Chawa did not have earthly parents, he wants us to leave our mother and father so that we then have a chance to experience this on our own. And boy, you know, if I look at most people's lives, I mean, I had a really, really horrible father, and my mother sided with my father. So it was good that I left him. And boy, I'm not unique in that regard. The majority of people have parents that are strange in one way or another. Now, this recognition about Adam and Chawa not having parents is advanced by the realization that that Yahweh said in this terms of you shall leave. Well, the Hebrew word for leave here was azab, abandon, reject, desert, forsake, release. Yeah,
all those things.
Yeah. You've got to walk away from those things if you're going to experience what God has to offer in the covenant. So Yahweh would not have used azab in reference to man leaving his mother and father unless he was trying to make a point. We would not forget of the 215 times that azab appears in the Tanakh, it is translated forsaken on 130 occasions. To forsake is to reject and abandon. I'm sure this because it sheds light on, as I say, the fifth statement, etched in stone. Beyond all of this, and based upon these instructions, as they're provided at Bereshit 2:24, the father and mother we are to value and revere, holding in high esteem so as to prolong our days in the land, cannot be earthly parents. We're just instructed to azab, abandon, leave, and reject them when we engage with and become close to the women in our lives. Not only is it important to reject and forsake that which you, I mean, impossible to forsake that which you highly esteem and honor, showing reverence for. So we have some insights here that, in context, help us understand. So to be consistent, Yahweh could not tell us to azab, be absent from or forsake our father and mother, while at the same time telling us to honor and glorify the very same people. And that is unless the instruction is speaking of our heavenly father and spiritual mother, and this relationship is equated to the breath of covenant family. Yahweh is establishing with mankind and then mirroring through giving Adam Chawa, bringing Adam and Chawa together. This is the way to conduct one's life. A motivation to push forward and be persistence, the very heartbeat of life, its essential nature, the ability to communicate intelligently regarding our desire to share positive thoughts and heralding the good news. Properly cared for, the human body is also a beautiful thing. That's something that God is going to underscore with his next statement. And the right kind of relationship, it is something to be enjoyed and to bring pleasure. God is not a miserable prude, unlike the religious who corrupt his intent and nature. This is Bereshit 2:25. And the two, the man and his woman, they were naked. And they were not ashamed. They were not embarrassed. They weren't wrong. They weren't the least bit stressed over it. Lo bosh. So, nothing wrong with a man and woman not wearing clothes. The religious condemn nudity, but they're putting themselves at odds with Yahweh. God designed the male and female forms to be attractive. Therefore, it's our attitude, not our appearance, which gets us into trouble. A bad attitude is the most disabling of all disabilities. A good attitude is the catalyst for a great relationship. We ought to think of those that we love, that they're attractive. And as we turn the page and we move on to the next chapter, there's a lot we're going to learn from this relationship and how we get ourselves into trouble and cross purposes with God. What is that shift in attitude which led to Chawa's exodus from Eden? And we're going to contemplate how this change in perspective caused her to consider nakedness offensive. Was it her body or her new attitude that caused her to be ashamed and want to hide? So we'll make a little bit of progress on this and then pick up next week. But just a couple of insights before we begin to explore now the nature of Adam and Chawa together, because God's going to go right to, not to, well, they had so many wonderful days frolicking through waterfalls and they jumped on unicorns and rode them across the sky. No, that's not what he's going to do. He's going to go right to what went wrong here. He's going to do a neged here on us. So while there is one covenant, like a family, it evolves and grows over time. It, of course, begins with Adam. Although it is unspoken, there's every indication that Yahweh, who conceived him, considered Adam to be his son. The terms of the initial covenant agreement would have focused on a very simple choice. Do this and be happy and live, or do that and die. These instructions were spoken, not written. Second, the covenant begins to evolve and it moves on with Noah, we're told enough about his interaction with Yahweh to know that he accepted the conditions of the covenant, which would be codified later with Abraham. The ark's builder knew Yahweh, listened to him, and did as God instructed. As a result, Yahweh spared Noah and his family. This leads to the first formal announcement of the covenant, one where God makes our promises that he will fulfill. And of course, that first mention of the covenant is stated alongside a rainbow, seven distinct colors, with green the color of life in the middle, all created out of a combination of light and water, light being the symbol of Yahweh, water being the symbol of the set-apart spirit. Light in all of its glory, with particularly broken down into seven colors, with green in the midst, just like a menorah. The third iteration of the covenant is special. After introducing himself to Abraham, Yahweh delineated a very specific set of directions, which would need to be understood, accepted, and acted upon to become part of the eternal family. He asked Abraham to walk away from Babel confusion, from religion and politics, and then walk to him and become perfected. He wanted Adam to trust and rely upon him, to closely examine and carefully consider these instructive conditions, and to be circumcised, separated from his animalistic nature. If Adam acted upon these things, Yahweh agreed to bless him in an equal number of ways, making him immortal, perfecting him, adopting him into his family, enriching and empowering him. The covenant with Abraham and through him with us was affirmed 4,000 years ago when Adam chose to trust Yahweh with that which was most dear to him, his son. Every essential detail of this agreement was memorialized in writing in the first book of the Torah, so that we would appreciate what Yahweh was offering and expecting in return. The fourth iteration was with Jacob, who became Yisrael. The covenant was enlarged so that it was offered to the chosen people. An individual relationship had grown to include 12 sons, who in turn fathered many children. By the time we reach Moses, and the liberation of the chosen people, Yahweh again reaffirmed his covenant by leading the children of Israel to the promised land, into his home. Exquisitely memorialized in the Torah, the fifth evolution of the covenant reveals the consequences, both good and bad, of accepting Yahweh's guidance or rejecting it. Then 3,000 years ago, mankind was given a word's eye view of the covenant in action. Dod, David, became all that a man can be, from the Son of God to the King of Kings, from the Messiah to the Shepherd, from prophet to poet. Yahweh's relationship with his chosen one was manifest in very different circumstances to those enjoyed by Abraham. Yisrael had become a nation under Dod's leadership, as the son's home was built on the very same ridgeline as his father's. Now, however, within a generation, Yisrael grew unfaithful through their religion and their politics. As a direct result, Yahweh divorced Yisrael and what was once an expanding and prosperous nation came to be the world's most notorious and perpetual victim. Through the infidelity of religious worship, Yehudim, the beloved of Yah became Jews, who were now estranged from God. Well, that was 2,700 years ago. It brings us to the seventh iteration of the covenant, one destined to play out just 13 years from this moment, around Teruah in 2020. This time, the covenant's renewal is designed to reestablish God's family, reconciling the relationship between Yisrael, Yehuda, and Yahweh. Upon his return, Dod and all who had come to accept the covenant's terms will find God writing a copy of his Torah guidance inside of us, such that we are properly guided throughout eternity. That is why this is the seventh and final iteration of the covenant. This marks the time when the Word of God and the family of God are one, indivisible and inseparable. The covenant will be as Yahweh intended.
Yeah.
Well, we are have reached the end of our broadcast program, and that's a lot to think about, the seven iterations of the covenant. We're going to actually take a little detour. We'll do this next week, fellas. We're going to take a little detour into Hosha. Salvation is from Yah. I just want to have a little better understanding of this concept of this marriage vow, because, you know, here the covenant was building and growing, and so much wonderful things were happening as we go from Adam to Noah to Abraham to Moshe to Tod. This crescendo. And within 300 years, it would be divorce. And Yahweh's answer on divorce is you simply write a letter. And so we're going to consider the letter of divorce so that we understand what happened and what the proper answer is. So I'd like to take a little detour out of Bar-Rashith just to have a better appreciation for this covenant that we're going to. Well, we're less than a third of the way through this chapter on Adam. And we're going to explore which really is two chapters worth, because we're going to go from Adam to Yahweh. I find that what God is going to share is so interesting. There's so many perspectives that are so seldom considered that I'm convinced that for the next few weeks as we go through this, maybe even month or so, that your overall understanding of what works and what doesn't work and what God is trying to communicate and what are the issues that actually transpired in the garden and how did Hasatan prevail? Why was he there? What was it that Chawa did that was inappropriate? What did Adam do that was inappropriate? Even looking at the consequences of their actions, the whole thing is very, very rich in teaching and guidance. And it's most certainly worth our time.
Mm-hmm.
So, fellas, it is now 10 o'clock here in Atlantic time. And for a guy that gets up before the sun, it's at 5-something in the morning. It's time for me to say goodnight, and that's a good ending point. Thank you for contributing and joining us this evening. May Yah bless you all.
Shalom. Shabbat shalom. Thank you all. Good night.
Good night.